President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania test positive for the coronavirus. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Late last night, the president revealed that the nation's first couple had tested positive after a top aide came down with the virus. The president's physician issued a statement saying that the Trumps were doing well, but were expected to spend their time at the White House residence. Doctors said that the president was expected to continue to carry out his duties without disruption, but the president did cancel plans to attend a fundraiser and fly to Florida for a rally. Stunning news comes after a raucous debate on Tuesday night, where the president and his Democratic challenger, Joe Biden, faced off in the same room for some 90 minutes. To examine these latest developments in studio, we have Salisbury University political science professor Michael Laughlin, and on the phone, the Republican John Barkovich. And welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, John, I'm going to turn to you first. What was your reaction when you first heard the news?
I assume we've gone from the debate, which was theoretically going to be our discussion point today, to the news that the president and the first lady have tested positive. And it certainly raises again the issue of the virus in terms of how we as a people have dealt with it, and how we have dealt with it differently in parts of the country and with personal decisions that people make. And so I think the president has contracted the disease. I have a feeling that he'll get a considerable amount of sympathy from his supporters, who will be certainly concerned about his abilities as we go forward, particularly in this part of the election cycle, which is the last 30 days, and it's obvious that he will be curtailed in his abilities to get his message out over the next 10 to 14 days, depending on the extent and length of his quarantine period. So I think, as a Trump supporter, I'm concerned, obviously, for his health, he and the First Lady, and I'm also concerned as a Trump supporter as to whether or not he will be capable or what abilities he will be able to use in the next 10 to 14 days to help foster his campaign.
Michael?
I agree with John, actually, that the political implication is that it slows down his campaign, for sure, because he does best with his rallies and attempting to rally his supporters to turn out. This will be a problem for him going at this point. I think, though, that it One big issue for him, I think, at this point, is his credibility with regard to the virus is now undermined even further because all along he's been trying to marginalize its threat to us, and here he has fallen victim to it. And so I think for voters who were undecided, this is one more problem in terms of the credibility of Donald Trump.
Well, go ahead, John.
Just a quickie, Mike. If in fact he sails through this with no symptoms, and comes out at 10 to 14 days with a big smile and a big rally, do you not think that in some respects helps him say, yes, the virus was very deadly, but now we've really got, and it's not, you know, it's not as bad as we thought, and look at me, I've had it and I'm fine. Does that not help him in that presentation? Because I agree with you that his contracting the disease has brought the virus back up to the top of the campaign, no question about it.
Yeah.
Mr. Biden has used that as a central linchpin of his campaign, and it sort of started to fade away as we had less and less COVID illness, less and less death, less and less hospitalizations. And so that I think this has brought that to the fore again, but it may yet turn out to the president's behalf if, in fact, he and his wife sail through this disease without any significant symptomatology. And he comes out saying, see, I told you, it's not as bad as they have been saying.
Yeah. One problem, of course, I think with that, I hate to even get into, you know, whether he gets really ill or not. I mean, we hope, of course, that they both do sail through this well. But we won't know for the next 5 to 14 days, essentially, of whether or not that's going to be the case. So and people are, of course, voting, and so that I think that the credibility at this point is undermined, And now, if he comes out of it well, can he claim then? Well, perhaps, but it's a bit too late at that point. I mean, the dynamics of this race, I think politically speaking, the dynamics of this race seem to be quite set. And this further, I think, solidifies perhaps Biden's lead at this point because of this damage to his credibility. I think there's no question that people who had doubts said, well, Mr. Trump, our president, doesn't think this is a big threat. Now he's got it. Well, that breaks his credibility for sure.
And one addendum to that would be, though, wouldn't the response that he's the most protected person in the United States and still got it?
Yeah,
does that help foster the concept of, you know, even he can't be protected because this virus is so aggressive and everywhere? Does that help him or hurt him?
I think the more details, we're just now beginning to get details about the how he was running the White House. And from what we can tell at this point, it seems that he was pretty reckless with this. In other words, the dismissal of mask wearing was he took it into the White House. He didn't like people wearing masks. And clearly the practice appears to be that mask wearing was dismissed. These are the results. I mean, it's not more people could still be come out have been contagious with this illness. At this point, we have three: himself, Melania, and Hope Hicks. But more could be coming.
Right. No, there's no question more could be coming. But yeah. I think I still don't want to lose sight of the fact that it appears that the coronavirus is different now than it was when this started. And I think that's kind of what the president has been trying to convince people, that we really need to do. We really need to start to get kids back to school. We really need to start opening up. Florida is now fully open, and they haven't had any second, third, or fourth wave of the virus. So I think this still may end up helping him in his concept that we need to go forward. We cannot let this virus stop us. It didn't stop me, and it shouldn't stop you.
Well, I just sort of interject here. First of all, we're coming on about 207,000 now dead, as well as spikes in a number of states, including a lot of red states.
Right.
So that as I listen to and read about what physicians and the experts are saying, that we could be actually seeing in some areas a mutation of this particular virus that could actually be more contagious. So I think, I mean, I appreciate the fact that everybody would like to see this thing come to an end and roll down. I think we're in a time where we still really don't know enough. The emphasis on at least wearing masks, is certainly a good thing. In terms of vaccines, they're probably still, in terms of distribution and production, are still probably about 6 months away. So, I mean, I think one should not be optimistic at this point. But I do want to get to something that Mike referred to, which was this timeline. Because as I understand it, there was a debate on Tuesday. And then Hope Hicks apparently developed some symptoms on the plane after a rally on Wednesday. She tested positive on Thursday morning. And then, of course, after that, the president goes to a New Jersey rally with a smaller staff. No mention, by the way, by the White House spokesperson at the press briefing about anything that's going on. We then have Bloomberg, who reports about Hicks. That's then followed by the president telling Sean Hannity last night that he and Mulaney had been tested. We're awaiting, of course, the results. This, of course, is a result of the Hicks revelation. And then, of course, we had the announcement late last night. We should also mention, by the way, that Vice President Mike Pence has tested negative. But it does seem as if there is this, I don't know whether callousness is quite the right word, but there wasn't the kind of alarm or kind of concern I would have expected in a White House, particularly when Hope was tested positive.
If I could get to answer that first.
Go ahead.
I think that's because, as I alluded to earlier, the White House and the staff have been tested constantly. You couldn't get to see the president until you got tested. Every reporters have to be tested before they go to the press conferences. So I think they were being very aggressive in trying to determine whether or not people were positive before they came into the White House. So if you're tested and you're negative, then that sort of says, well, then maybe the issue of masks and social distancing is not as important when you know you're not positive. Having said that, once Hope did turn positive, then immediately they tested multiple people, including the president and the first lady. And so I think their response was appropriate once they knew that there was a positive case within their work pattern, and that once that person was found to be positive, they in fact then went further to test others that have had contact. But I don't think you stop. See, that's one of the issues that with stopping the country because you might get a virus is different than stopping an activity because you've proven to have the virus. And I guess there's a difference between Hope Hicks turning positive and knowing that others have obtained an infection as well.
What about the fact, though,
that... I don't think it's callousness. I don't think it's callousness or denial of the significance of the virus.
I guess the thing that struck me is that he went to this New Jersey rally. We're assuming he got tested in the morning, which is apparently when they get tested in the White House. But he went off in any event, and it just seems as if somehow there was just this sense that everything was going to be okay. And obviously, as we found, the virus just doesn't know what okay is.
The virus is very contagious, and you don't know until you see the results of the test. That's clearly the case.
Right. Go ahead.
I don't think the president has... I mean, he has attempted to modify his behavior in the recent past in terms of masks and social distancing, but I think the significance of the virus is not lost on the president or his or supporters of the president, including myself.
Mike?
The proof is in the pudding. It seems to me that the practice was no mask wearing in the White House. So no matter whether you get tested or not, the recommendations from CDC, they're the scientists, they're the experts with regard to this virus. These rules were flouted by the president in his own workplace, his own workspace. So I have to agree with the notion that there is an arrogance and a callousness towards his own family, towards his own staff, in terms of not taking the simple precautions of social distancing and mask wearing. These were simple but effective preventative measures, and he didn't take those. He didn't establish those as the practices that were going to go on in the White House, and he's clearly paying a price, but other people may pay a price as well. So again, I would push it further that what this says to the rallies and all the people who thought, well, the president doesn't think this is important, now he's got it. And I think people, even people in his own base are going to have to be sitting back and saying, well, wait, this turns out to be real, because the president himself has now contracted the virus.
Let me ask you this, John, before we move on to the future of the campaign, and that is that does the fact that he got it and the fact that he was so dismissive, particularly of masks, amongst other things, does that show a disregard for his own supporters, that ultimately he got caught with the very basic problem of not wearing a mask, of not being distanced, of not taking perhaps more precautions, and in the end, he winds up getting it? I mean, it just seems to me that there's a connection there with his scoffing at the use of masks and so on.
Well,
I don't know.
That may be stretching it just a little bit. I think what Trump has always tried to downplay the effect of the virus on the economy and life, and he has tried to say that there is always a balance between our concern for the virus and our need to undertake certain things, social distancing and masks, if that's what you want to do. But we need to kind of keep that as an important part of our life, but not making every decision based on the virus. We have to make decisions based on your understanding of your risks, your understanding of what the virus might do to you as a person. If you're healthy and young and 14 years of age, you probably don't have to worry about it at all. But if you're 72 with multiple diseases, then you maybe should always have a mask and always be social distance and not. So I think there's a range of reply that people have to make decisions of their own as to what's best for them if they have the knowledge of what the virus can do. And I think they have now seen that the virus can even get those of us who are theoretically the best protected, i.e. the president. So the virus is contagious, it is a worry, and we all have to make decisions about what's best for us and our family. And so if you have a relative that lives at home with you that is high risk, then I think you have to have social distancing and wear a mask all the time so you don't bring the virus home. If everybody in your family is healthy, then the risks are less, and so the concern has to be less. I think there's a range. I don't think there's a single answer for every person, for every state, for example, because you're right, the red states are starting, in the middle of America, are starting to see a wave, but in some respects, they're seeing the first wave. And so I think we all have to make decisions that what is what's best for us and our families.
Although before we move on, there is this thing about public health, and public health takes precedent over individual decisions. We're all, you know, the most famous case, obviously, is Typhoid Mary. But the idea that, for instance, your right to say not wear a mask should not be a right to then send to infect me, for example, or somebody else. And
oh,
I think
no,
that's
agreed.
and that's why you get these rules, whether it's mandatory mask or testing and so on.
You have to wear a mask to go into some business.
Right, exactly,
You have to put a mask. You don't put a mask on, you don't go in. And I think that there's nothing wrong with that.
John, if I may interrupt just real quickly, but that's precisely what Donald Trump did not want in his own White House. So he invited his staff, his workers, to come into the White House without wearing masks. So precisely the rules that we now have, luckily, within our own community, Wacomico County, you can't go into a business without wearing a mask because that it will protect not only you, but the workers in the business. And yet the leader of the country refused to apply those simple rules, those simple protocols. And this is the result.
So he has capacity to test people. See, Walmart doesn't have the capacity to test people as they come in the door with a 5-minute COVID test.
Yeah, but that's not. But the CDC doesn't say, oh, if you just get tested every day, then you don't have to worry about mask wearing. That's not what they say.
I know.
Right? The CDC.
Well, they know that's not. Well, that is not a possibility.
Well, but
you can't test everybody every day. I mean, you just can't.
Correct. Right.
And
well, it's
but
pretty clear it didn't test- work, right, John? It's pretty clear that protocol, testing every day, has not protected Donald Trump as president or his wife.
Agreed.
We're going to get on to the campaign here. Although I would note that, and I think it was Fauci. I think it was. Who said that wearing a mask may very well be is just as effective as a vaccine in terms of dealing with it. But let's turn to the so politics wise, what does this mean in terms of presidential debates? Obviously, it depends on how the president is feeling and his condition as well. And the debate that we just came off of, which was on Tuesday, what does it mean in terms of the fact that the president will not necessarily be out there with his large rallies, at least for a while, could be shut down as long as 14 days, although we'll see whether he quarantines. I mean, what kind of impact do you think is that going to have on the presidential race in terms of its mechanics, you know?
No question it's going to be a big impact on the Trump campaign because the Trump campaign depends upon his Energizer Bunny-like appearances in multiple areas throughout the country, ginning up his base and keeping them involved. Now, I don't know what he's going to do between now and whatever his quarantine period will be, but I have a feeling they will do something to maintain the support of the base. But it won't be the same. In terms of the debates, I'm pretty sure there will be another debate. The next debate will be an entirely different situation. It'll be the town hall kind of debate, which will be certainly a different milieu and will have different aspects for both Biden and Trump. So I think that will take place. Now, I'm not positive of that because anything could happen. The president gets very sick. Mr. Biden and his campaign decide to back out. I just, there are multiple things that could happen to not allow the second debate to take place between those two. Now, we have a debate next week with the vice president and the vice presidential candidate. That will take place. But the future for debates is unclear.
You think we might just go to assuming that he's up to it physically, to a Zoom format of a debate? They're not in the same room and nobody's there, as it were?
That certainly could be the case, but I don't think that's what Mr. Trump would want. Mr. Trump prefers confrontation and face-to-face fisticuffs.
But I think you're right. Mike?
It does depend upon the trajectory of his illness at this point. So it's hard to anticipate, particularly the town hall format, because the town hall format would involve interacting with people, and so person to person, I wonder if that will take place, at least in that form. That Don may be right that if any debate takes place, it may be a Zoom presentation. So I think the debates, I mean, off of the first debate, there was already consideration that these are worthless experiences, and perhaps we should put a dagger through the heart.
Well, I mean, everybody was looking forward to the first debate. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was anxiousness on both sides to see these two men face to face, and so I think from the Trump side, they were hoping that Mr. Biden would come out and drool and not be able to put two sentences together. And then on the Biden side, they were hoping that the president would come out and just totally decompose and just go crazy, and that would help them. So I think neither side really won what they thought they potentially could achieve in the first debate. So there may be less appetite for a second because of that.
Well, do you think that... if there is another set of debates, or if the president, for example, is not up quite to campaigning as he did in the past, does that then make Mike Pence's role much larger? And how does he handle that sort of carrying the water of the campaign itself?
Well, there's no question I believe that to be the case.
Yeah?
And whether it's Pence or whether it's Donald's children, you know, Eric or Donald Jr., I see them still wanting to have, you know, a significant campaign activity. It's just that it won't be Donald Trump at the top. It might be Donald Trump Jr. with a rally someplace, and then there's a big screen, and then guess who joins us with the Zoom format? Oh, there's our president, and he's going to rally the troops that way. So having undertaken some Zoom conferences in the recent past, it's not the same as live face-to-face anyway.
Because one of the advantages of the rallies is that while they are not now being covered nationally from wall to wall as they did in 2016, they did have the advantage of scooping up the local media, who would often play them almost in their entirety, so that they became sort of this free ad, as opposed to what we saw in 2016, which was actually on a national level. They could at least achieve that kind of presence free of charge, as it were, without having to spend a lot of money in terms of television ads, that kind of thing. Mike, what's your sense about where this and Mike Pence's role becomes, I think, larger in the campaign?
I think I would agree with John that without Trump, these other figures do not carry the weight. I mean, they can't carry what I mean. Donald Trump is the phenomenon for his base. So in that respect, again, the campaign is seriously damaged, I think, moving forward. I would also, in terms of the character of the first debate, I would also agree with John, to a certain extent, that Donald Trump's basically, he acted like a political barbarian, I think, in terms of his approach to it. But it was effective in terms of preventing Joe Biden from getting out his message. And I think that what the Biden folks really want to do is to have Biden get his message out. And so to the extent that he would want to do additional debates, those would be the places that he'd want to get that done. But unless the rules are, unless they can kill the mic, I think the Trump people are still would try to basically undermine Biden's message delivery, which was what I think what Trump tried to do at that first debate. I would add one other thing, and I think this is part of the dynamic of the race. One analyst, I think it was a Trump analyst, was arguing that, well, this is a base election, and that to the extent that Donald Trump can prevent Biden from getting his message out, that he can't rally his folks. And moreover, to the extent that he can get Biden to react negatively, then you can increase the negatives on Biden. And if you can, in other words, Donald Trump wins in 2016 in large part because neither candidate looked upon favorably. Biden remains more favorable, certainly, than Donald Trump does right now. If you can bring that down so significantly, then perhaps the race can be closed. Right now, of course, I think the dynamic is simply not that case that we've seen since June. The 7 or 8 point difference in the national polling, and I think that these circumstances now probably stabilize that even further.
Well, one of the things that was struck me, John, is, and it sort of dovetails into what Mike is saying, is that the debate and the outcome of the debate was really wound up being all about Trump's activities or how he carried himself, which was viewed rather dimly in many quarters. I ran across actually Frank Luntz, a Republican pollster and focus group guy. He had a group, and there were startling remarks from these particular individuals. They were undecided, independents, and the description, for instance, that Trump had from them was arrogant, un-American, unhinged. The one that really popped out, of course, was crackhead. And then Biden was, on the other hand, Biden's the words were professional, restrained, compassionate, politician, and presidential. And one of the things I think that happened in that debate was that it shifted certainly away from any effort by Biden to get out a coherent message because of the interruptions. On the other hand, it focused really on Trump's behavior, which may very well have been, I think, a negative for him. What's your sense about all of that? Because it does seem as if we're not talking about health care plans or any of that thing,
we're not,
right?
We're not, obviously. And that's why I have said along, and I continue to say, that if you were undecided, then nothing happened at that debate to theoretically push your vote one way or the other. I don't, because if you were a Trump hater, you still hate Trump. If you're a Trump lover, you still love Trump. And Mr. Biden never presented any real cogent plan for what he was going to do. He wouldn't address some of the issues that Trump tried to raise in terms of the packing the court, in terms of statehood for D.C. and Puerto Rico. He's denying his own manifesto, as Trump calls it. I don't think any undecided voter sat through that hour and a half, and the end of that hour and a half said, "Oh, holy mackerel, that was fantastic. I got to go out and vote for Joe Biden." Or, "Wow, boy, Trump did a great job. I'm going to switch my thoughts and I'm going to go with Trump." I don't think that happened to any of the undecideds. And
we'll see. I mean, the polling will help us identify whether or not that's the case. But look, the models of voting, one important dimension of voting behavior is character.
Understood.
Our assessment of character.
Understood.
And Donald Trump revealed just an outrageous incivility and disrespectful character. And for undecideds, again, we're not talking about people coming in as they love Trump or they hate Trump. By definition, an undecided voter is someone, I want to watch this and make up my mind. I'm not sure yet. But his performance did not undermined his ability to get those voters. So they either will stay home, perhaps, or they'll vote for Joe Biden. Either way, Trump loses.
I just don't see it that way. I don't see the undecided voters going to Biden just because of Trump. Trump's personality and his New York, you punch me, I punch you back twice, has always been there. And I think that was manifest in the debate. I don't think that's a new revelation to Trump supporters. I don't think it's a new revelation to anybody. And
no, we're not talking about Trump supporters, yeah. John. You keep shifting. We're talking about undecided.
No, genuinely.
Undecided people.
Undecided people
can be persuaded on the basis of character. People vote on character.
They may, but they also will vote on the economy. They will also vote on accomplishments that you've had in the past, and what are you going to bring forward? And Trump has a past, and he has a future that he's described. Mr. Biden, I'm not sure what the future is with Mr. Biden, because he never really has articulated it and hasn't really clearly said, here's why you need to elect me. If you say he's a nice man, that's the old Uncle Joe, he's a nice old guy. But that I'm not sure that's what will get him votes from the undecided people. They want action. They want to see America continue to get better and get through the virus and have our economy come back and get kids back to school, et cetera, et cetera.
By the way, you can go to his website, but that's another issue. he does talk about his plans, but the other issue I did want to get to was the business about Proud Boys, the issue of race and white supremacy. The president's had a difficult time dealing with that. Certainly in the debate, he wanted to switch that to Antifa. And it wasn't until, I think it was last night, that he finally said, yes, I condemn the Proud Boys as well as the KKK and so on. I guess one of my questions is, it was an easy layup at the debate to say, yeah, I denounce white racism, but it just seemed as if he were cornered if he didn't want to say it. I'm mystified by that. And I know, for instance, there was a Fox reporter who had a difficult time with his spokesman, with again talking about why can't you just say it out loud? And there seemed to be this hesitancy. What are you to make of that? Because it made the issue of racism come to the fore. Now, whether you think that he's addressed this in the past or not, it was really almost beside the point because it became one of the focal points in the aftermath of that debate.
Well, I think, as I remember, he said sure three times to, denouncing white supremacy. And then the Proud Boys, he made a specific recommendation, although I'm not sure he knew who the Proud Boys were at that point in time. He does now. Having said that, this white supremacist thing goes way back to Charlottesville. And it's just, I believe, it's what he said at that point in time was not racist, and he's tried to defend that statement that he made multiple times since. And I think there's concern on my part as to why all of a sudden is this the cry from the media about white supremacy, because my sense is that there may be some concern on the part of the Democratic Party that the black vote, African-American vote, has started to shift in some respects to Trump, and this is an attempt to bring up an old complaint that I think has been settled in the past. And that's why Trump doesn't want to say anything more about it now.
Michael? That's a statement free of fact.
Maybe it's my opinion.
Well, let us hear. John and I are waiting to hear.
There's no evidence that the African-American vote, the black vote, is shifting to Donald Trump. There's just no evidence. You're making that up. That's what seems what Trumpian folks do. They make things up. And so I think that Donald Trump has revealed again and again that he is a racist, that his attitude, he couldn't bring himself to condemn white supremacy because he looks upon those people as part of his base, and he doesn't want to alienate those folks, and he wants those folks, and he sympathizes with those folks. I mean, the various tell-all books that are coming out, they're revealing the inside character of this man. But we've known the character of Donald Trump for decades. To deny the racial animus of this president and this individual, I think, is to fantasize and to romanticize reality.
One other thing I want to get to, and then we'll wrap this up here, and that is that the impact on down ballot races. One of the two things that really popped out at me in the Senate race in North Carolina, Tillis is now behind, and Mississippi, the Democrat Espy is actually now even in that Senate race. That's not to say anything about some of the other races, which seem to be close, or in the case of Lindsey Graham, he could very well lose, which is really shocking. It does seem as if there's a overall shift going on that could really impact the Republican Party when it comes to the Senate?
Well, I think we've known all along that the Senate was going to be an issue because we had so many Republican senators up for re-election, and so the numbers were bad to begin with. We've known that for a long time, and the issue for many of these senatorial candidates is no different than the Trump-Biden. It's very close. This is a very closely divided nation, and it's going to be small numbers of the undecided voters that are going to swing the election one way or another. And so we've got 30 days to go, and there's a lot that can happen, as we know from in just the last 24 hours. So there is great concern on the part of the Republican Party for how the Senate will end up. If they lose the Senate and the Democrats maintain the House, it doesn't make any difference if Trump gets reelected, because nothing will get done.
Mike, final words.
I think the flipping of the Senate is a real possibility at this point. And the dynamic, again, I don't think this is going to be a base election. I think that the early indications are that this is going to be a very high turnout election. We're already seeing the mail-in balloting coming in at very large numbers. I mean, I did read recently where Republicans are genuinely worried about the gap between Democrats with their mail-in balloting and Republicans with their mail-in balloting. So I think that if it is a big turnout, then the possibility rises, of course, for a flipping of the Senate to the Democrats.
Right.
Well, we've been speaking with Salisbury University political science professor Mike Laughlin, and on the phone with us, Wicomico County Republican John Barkovich. No doubt we will check in again as this campaign develops, and we'll see what happens. We, of course, wish the first couple well in terms of their health and hopes everything turns out okay.
Gentlemen, it was a pleasure talking to you both.
See you, John.
This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.